Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's call to discuss the Supreme Court DACA decision. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session, and you may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Marilena Ingapié, Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Priscilla, and good morning. This is definitely a good morning, especially for DACA recipients and their loved ones. Thanks, everybody, for joining this important Monday morning call. My name is Marilena Ingapié. I'm the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center. I'm really proud to stand here today and introduce a distinguished group of people to discuss the latest news from the Supreme Court, in which this morning, just a couple of hours ago, it denied the Trump administration's appeal of the California cases challenging President Trump's unlawful and heartless termination of the DACA program. As you all know, on September 5th, 2017, President Trump upended the lives of hundreds of thousands of immigrant youth, as well as millions more of their families, employers, schools, and communities when he terminated DACA. He challenged Congress to come up with a solution to prevent these young people from risking deportation, only to reject each bipartisan agreement aimed at fixing DACA legislatively. Trump both created the crisis that our immigrant youth now find themselves in, and he is the only one to blame for the fact that a solution has not yet been reached. While Congress has been working hard to find a solution, a legislative solution, so have the courts. States like California sought to protect their residents and hold the Trump administration accountable. Organizations like the National Immigration Law Center have done the same on behalf of our courageous plaintiffs, like Eliana Fernandez, who you'll hear from this morning. These legal challenges have resulted in important victories for immigrant communities. In January, a federal district court in the Northern District of California ordered the federal government to accept renewal applications for DACA recipients. And a few weeks ago, a federal district court in New York reached the same conclusion in our case, the Batalla Vidal case. These lawsuits are at the early stages of litigation, and they're all at several different circuits in which the wheels of justice must turn. By denying the Department of Justice's request to hear the California case, the Supreme Court has rightly allowed our clients, along with several others who brought legal challenges to the termination of DACA, to have their day in court. The Trump administration has the right to appeal the lower court rulings, but they tried to game the system by leapfrogging over the circuits. Today, the Supreme Court reminded them that all of us, including President Trump and Attorney General Sessions, need to play by the usual rules. The most important news, however, is that immigrant youth with DACA are eligible to renew their DACA, which will give them much needed, although still temporary, stability. With me today are several legal experts and movement leaders. I'll introduce each one of them, and then after they speak, we'll open it up for Q&A. First, I'd like to introduce my own Attorney General from California, California Attorney General Javier Becerra, who has been leading the way on many legal challenges to the Trump administration, including one of the cases which was before the Supreme Court today. Attorney General?
Adelina, thank you very much for all the work that you and NOAC have been doing over the years on behalf of so many immigrants. I'm pleased to join all of our speakers, and I will simply say it's a victory for all dreamers, certainly a great victory for California because we are home to one in four of all the dreamers in our country. It's a victory for the rule of law, and it's a victory for our economy. Just talk to any of the more than 100 companies, tech companies and otherwise, that are with us in this lawsuit because they know that this would cripple so much of the economic activity in places like California and beyond. And so what the Supreme Court essentially sent in terms of a message to the Trump administration is go through the regular process. Don't skirt the process and try to go around it. It's unnecessary to request to go straight to the Supreme Court. There's a tried and true process. Use it. And so we're pleased that what we have argued from the beginning, our foundational premise has always been DACA is fully legal. The Trump administration's attempts to end it were fully illegal and contrary to the rule of law. And so we hope that this has become clearer as each step of the way, whether it was the nationwide injunction that California got for the 800,000 or so dreamers so they could remain and actually apply to re-up their status as DACA recipients showed, or whether it was this latest victory where the Supreme Court told the Trump administration to follow the regular process. We hope that all these victories are adding up to show that this is a program that is fully legal, and we won't stop. And I say that not just as the Attorney General for the state of California, but I say it as a son of immigrants in California, and I know throughout the country, those of us who believe in the work of these dreamers, who believe in the effort of all immigrants to build a better America, we want them all to know we've got their back. So I'm pleased to join so many of the champions for immigrant families and American values on this phone call today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Attorney General, for your leadership on DACA and on so many fronts. Next, we'll hear from Eliana Fernandez, who is a plaintiff in our lawsuit with Make the Road New York and Yale Law School. Eliana is a New Yorker. She is a DACA recipient and a mother, and she's an incredible leader in our country. Eliana?
Yes, good morning. My name is Eliana Fernandez. I am one of the plaintiffs in the Batalla Vidal versus DHS case, and I'm Make the Road New York member. I live in Long Island, New York, where I am a homeowner. I am a dreamer, and I joined the lawsuit against Trump's decision to end DACA to fight for my family. Trump's decision was an attack on me, my family, and my community. I had lived in the United States since a month before my 15th birthday. Since then, I have gone to school, finishing high school and college. I have a family now with two beautiful children who were born in this country. I own a house and pay my mortgage, and I work every day at a community organization to help provide legal services to the people in my community. But this administration makes a decision based on racism, not by listening and learning from stories like mine. That's why dreamers like me sue them for this reckless decision. And it's why we were thrilled to win a preliminary injunction in California and New York. Today, I'm thrilled with the Supreme Court decision. The Department of Justice tried to go around the appeals court to attack our families, and their attempt was rejected. This means that dreamers like me will be able to continue renewing our DACA, which provides us protection from Trump's deportation force. As a mother, it means that I can continue to be with my children. Still, we also know that we need a permanent solution. That's why we need Congress to act and pass a DREAM Act. I have joined thousands of older dreamers in Washington at a protest over the past several months. While Trump and his allies in the Senate tried to push a white supremacist agenda, we know the solution, passing a Clean DREAM Act with bipartisan support. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eliana, for your leadership and for all of the time that you put in, not only in the lawsuit, but in the movement and organizing for the DREAM Act as well. Next, we will hear from Andy Pincus, who is a partner at Mayor Brown, who has argued before the Supreme Court 27 times, and who is a close colleague and friend to the immigrant rights movement. Andy?
Thank you, Mary Elena. As Attorney General Becerra said, the Supreme Court here refused to bend the rules for the Trump administration. This was an extraordinary request. The facts didn't justify it, and it was rejected. So what's going to happen next? The two injunctions, one issued in New York, one issued in California, have been appealed to the courts of appeals. Briefing has started in the California case and will be completed, I believe, in the beginning of April. There hasn't been briefing yet in the New York case. Presumably that will get underway. There also are two other cases pending in the federal district courts in the District of Columbia and Maryland, and so we may see action in those district courts to move forward with the preliminary injunction and summary judgment motions that are pending there. But given the Supreme Court's action, it seems likely that the injunctions that are in effect, the two injunctions, will stay in effect until those courts of appeals rule, which at the earliest, I think, would be June or later, and obviously stay in effect beyond that if one or both of those courts affirms the lower court's decisions, which we would expect that they will do. There is, of course, the risk that the Department of Justice could try and get those injunctions put on ice at some point. But I think it will have a difficult time doing that, having asked for this extraordinary relief and been turned down, certainly until after a Court of Appeals rules. It seems very unlikely that they will try to get another kind of an extraordinary relief, a stay of these injunctions. But I think it's important to say, as others have noted, although the courts have stepped in, the route for a permanent solution here is through Congress, and so obviously those efforts are going to continue. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andy. Thanks for your partnership. And finally, we'll hear from Grace Martinez, who is the Policy and Advocacy Director from the United We Dream Network, which we have had the honor of co-leading the legislative fight for the DREAM Act with. Grace.
Thank you, Maria Elena. My name is Grace Martinez Rosas. I am the Advocacy Director for United We Dream, the largest immigrant youth act network in the country. I am also one of the 800,000 immigrant young people who have lived with protections because of DACA. I am thankful for courageous litigators like our partners at NILC, at Yale Law School, and Covington and Burling, who follow the lead of grassroots organizing and lead us into the courts and to continue to fight for our community. Today's court decision means that immigrant young people who have or previously had DACA will be able to renew DACA that gives our community some relief. But it does not give us permanent protections from the bullies that have been coming after us in our community. It does not mean that young people who don't have DACA yet can apply for it, and it does not mean that millions of young people who qualify for the DREAM Act but can't get DACA are protected. Donald Trump, Jeff Sessions, and the Justice Department are the bullies. Their goal is to make sure not one more immigrant is protected with DACA, and they don't and want to pass a mass deportation plan that must be stopped. After New York and California courts ruled that the Trump rescission of DACA was unlawful, the Trump and Jeff Sessions tried to skip the appeals process and get a decision from the Supreme Court. Let's be clear about their intentions. They weren't just looking to block an injunction. They were hoping that immigrant young people like my little sister would be barred from DACA, lose protections, be locked up, and be deported. That's what our community is fighting against. We are fighting against attacks on youth, on community members, as well as people of color by the anti-immigrant bullies in the Trump administration. We are grateful that immigrant young people who have DACA will have more time to renew, but most immigrant young people are not protected, and we need a permanent legislative protection now. Our community refuses to wait until the Court of Appeals makes a ruling to live our lives. We've waited far too long on institutions of power to decide our fate. This back and forth on DACA and the legislative process in Congress has created a crisis in our community. We need a permanent solution like the DREAM Act that does not go after our families and communities so that we can live and thrive. We need it for thousands of young immigrants, people like my friends Justin, Rodrigo, and the 10-year-old Rosa Maria who was detained by CBP outside of her hospital room. They all need a permanent solution, and then that is called the DREAM Act. For them, we will continue to fight nationally for the DREAM Act and winning local victories that protect undocumented families and communities without harming others. United We Dream remains resilient and committed to this fight. On March 5th, immigrant young people, our families, and our allies will return to Capitol Hill to remind Congress that our lives are still in limbo. We'll arrive at Trump's deadline, and Congress has yet to do their job. And their job is simple. Pass a narrow legislative solution that provides protection for me and other undocumented young people. We will remind Congress that what is at stake for our community if they do not move to a solution. We will make them hear our voices, and we will show them that we are here to stay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Grace. Thank you so much. And with that, we will open it up to questions. Operator, if you can give instructions for that.
Certainly. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. And once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. And we'll take our first question from Michael Rosenberg with Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm not sure if you have these statistics, but I was just wondering if you happen to know approximately how many people have been able to reapply or renew their DACA since ALSEP's original ruling in California.
Thank you for your question. I believe we don't have that data yet. I know that's starting to come in, and I think one of the things, and I don't know, Attorney General, if you want to speak to this, but I know one of the things in the ALSEP decision is ordering quarterly reports from the administration, but I think the first one is just coming up. Is there anything, Attorney General?
We could try to get back to you on that. I'm in D.C., and most of my team that's working on the case is back in California, so we can try to get you whatever information we have on that.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you, and we'll be sure to follow up with you on that as well. Make sure to connect the two of you. Operator, next question.
Certainly. We'll go next to Maya Rodan with Time Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks so much for this call. The question kind of gets to the first question a bit, just wondering what assurances you've gotten from DHS or the Trump administration in general that these renewal applications will be accepted.
Again, so following, and I don't know if Attorney General Becerra or Andy, if you want to speak to this, but following Judge Alsup's decision, the Department of Homeland Security, specifically USCIS, did put out guidance about how they will start accepting applications, et cetera. And we have started at the National Immigration Law Center, have started to receive notice of DACA renewals that have been approved since that order. So we do know that it's happening. I don't know if anybody on the call wants to speak to that.
This is Javier. I would simply say that it's important, and I hope the press can help us with this, is to make sure that for those dreamers who are looking to reapply, that they let us know what their experience was. I know there's been some talk that ICE and the Department of Homeland Security has been a little more difficult in trying to process the DACA paperwork, and we'd like to make sure that we're getting firsthand information about how the process has gone. We know people who have reapplied, but it's important that people know that under the law, they have a right now to re-up their status as DACA recipients.
And one of the things that Judge Alsup ordered was periodic reports, I believe quarterly reports, be filed. And so I think that the first filing deadline, I'm not sure when it is, but obviously that's going to be an opportunity to get some of the information that you all are asking about.
That's right.
Yeah, this is great. Yes, I will say that, in the personal lived experience, my little sister is one of the DACA recipients that, thanks to the leadership of Attorney General Becerra and folks, she was able to apply for DACA. The reality is that she hasn't yet been approved, and that is yet again a pointing to the uncertainty that young people are living in this moment, and why, we need to be able to call into question what the intentions of this Department of Homeland Security led by Donald Trump is, because you're having a renewal of the the addresses of people, of young people like my sister, giving up our fingerprints is going through the process, and we have yet to know what the intentions of this DHS are to approve them. And so the truth is we don't know, and we need the media to help us be able to uncover the truth. But what we do know is that, General Kelly called people like my sister and myself lazy for not getting off the couch and applying for DACA. We have seen that in United We Dream, that people are re-upping our DACA renewal clinics, and people are asking for support and paying for the application because there is uncertainty and because we have ICE agents hunting our communities. And so it is now a time to ask the Department of Homeland Security to abide by the rule of law and the courts and ensure that young people are able to be protected without hurting other people.
Great. Thank you, Gdeza. Operator, next question.
Yes, we'll go next to Rafael Bernal with The Hill. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for having this call. The White House already responded to the decision. They said a few things I'd like any of you to respond to, that the DACA program, which provides, and I'm quoting here, work permits and myriad government benefits to illegal immigrants en masse, is clearly unlawful. is one thing I'd like, and it says that the district judge is usurping legislative authority. And finally, the one specific thing I would like, maybe Attorney General Becerra might be able to talk to this. They say, we look forward to having this case expeditiously heard by the appeals court and, if necessary, the Supreme Court, where we fully expect to prevail. How long is the period that we can expect this injunction to last?
Great. Thank you for your questions, Rafael. Let's start with Attorney General Becerra and then Andy and then a couple of others, I think, may get to speak to this as well.
Rafael, you can let the Trump administration know the court would run its course faster if they stopped appealing every decision that comes out against them and we got to trial. This court will run its course the way it should to make sure that things are done legally and that the Trump administration is unhappy that decisions and rulings have gone against them is not the fault of the rule of law or the judges or the Dreamers or those of us defending them. It's the fault of the Trump administration, which try to act outside the rule of law. And they should look no further than the mirror if they're concerned about why they haven't had success. They should practice following the rule of law. And if we did that, then we could have a more consistent course of action here. And quite honestly, I think it would help to Congress to be able to get to a permanent solution so that we wouldn't have to dig the Dreamers deeper into this limbo hole that they're in. It is a nightmare for people to not know what they can do, and it is unfortunate that the Trump administration has exacerbated the process by trying to skirt the law and the rules at every turn. And so we hope that now that the Supreme Court has told the Trump administration it should go through the regular process, that will now be able to litigate this, where we believe that we will have a chance to prevail.
Thank you, sir.
I would say on the merits of the legal question, the only two federal judges who have addressed it have concluded that the program, there's a very, very strong argument that the program is lawful. We obviously think that's correct, but I do think it's relevant that the two judges who have considered it have reached that conclusion. So it's obviously the Trump administration's position that it's unlawful, but so far that position is not prevailing. In terms of the timeline, as I said, the briefing in the Ninth Circuit will be finished in early April. Then there will be an oral argument and then time for decision. So on that schedule, the injunction will at the minimum stay in effect until that decision comes down, and if, as we expect, the decision upholds the ruling of the district court, then the injunction would almost certainly stay in effect. Meanwhile, the Second Circuit briefing in the New York case hasn't even started yet, and that will have to run a similar course, briefing and then oral argument and then decision. So we're certainly looking at a matter of a significant number of months while this issue is decided by the courts in the normal process.
Great. Thank you, Andy. And Rafael, this is Mariela, and I think I would just add that, I mean, look, at the end of the day, this is like the administration is likely to appeal this to the Supreme Court, whether they do so through the regular course, as is expected, or they try to leapfrog again. We've seen this done throughout this first year of the administration, even on other cases. But what I think both in terms of adding about the legal authority, which both Attorney General Becerra and Andy relied on and referred to, I mean, let's remember this has all been a political issue. This is not a legal challenge to DACA. The fact that the administration acted because of and created this arbitrary deadline of September 5th and March 5th, and all because of the quote-unquote threat of litigation and the risk because of the threat from the Attorney General in Texas and other states. I mean, that was a political move. And remember, the state of Texas and other states never sued over DACA. DACA has been in place for almost 6 years now, 5.5. And the fact that this administration, even if it does believe that DACA is unlawful, has allowed DACA to continue, I think undermines that argument in terms of legal authority. We at the National Immigration Law Center and everyone on this call and many of our legal scholars across the country believe the complete opposite, which is why we have filed these legal challenges, that President Obama
had the legal authority under his executive authority to create a program like DACA, just the same way that previous administrations, both Republican and Democrat, since Eisenhower, have created similar programs under the Deferred Action Authority. So this will be resolved in the courts, but I think as both Andy and Attorney General Becerra mentioned, this is going to take months. And in the meantime, what that means for the real life consequence is that DACA recipients will be able to come forward and apply for renewal, at least for this temporary window that the courts are providing. Operator, next question. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move next to Carlos Ballesteros with Newsweek. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for this call. I have two questions. One is relating to the solidarity within immigrant communities. So far, as Congress has deliberated this issue back and forth for almost, for months now, the immigrant community has remained steadfast in its sort of rejection of the idea of trading in some benefits at the expense of others' rights or at the expense of militarizing the border. And I was wondering if you all expect this sort of solidarity to continue as the issue prolongs and as more people lose their status as time goes on. And I will allow all you can answer.
Yep. Great. Thanks for your question, Carlos. Why don't we go to Eliana and then Geisa? Eliana, you might be on mute.
Yes, I can repeat the question one more time, please.
Basically, he's asking about the solidarity that there has been across the immigrant rights movement in terms of the fight over the DREAM Act and ensuring that other parts of the immigrant communities are not undermined or harmed as a result of the DREAM Act, and whether that will continue, that solidarity, as people might start losing their status.
Thank you. Well, I think, as a DREAMer, as a documented person, I've been, grateful to have the support from many people, across the country, from people from our community. But we're not forgetting about our parents, the original DREAMers. Mm-hmm. We also, fighting for them because for them we are here, right? And I think it's important that they know that we're also fighting for them, that we always have our parents, in mind when we talk about this movement. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them, their sacrifices, and everything that they have gone through. So I think it's really important, to continue the fight also for our parents as we continue leading the movement for the DREAM Act.
Great. Thank you, Eliana. Carissa?
Yeah. At United We Dream, we are united in trying to save our families and community. This administration has repeatedly shown to us that they are aggressive about pushing immigrants out, that they've killed DACA, they've killed TPS protections for people who lived here with more than 20 years, and they're insisting on mass deportation in Congress. And so I think for us, it's not a choice. We are the community. This is about our families, and we are not dealing with a reasonable opponent. We're not dealing with a reasonable person. It's someone that has aligned themselves with white supremacist groups, and we're committed to saving our families. And I think that, the broad-based support that you've seen of our communities, the support from the courts, is all pointing towards that this is an unusual time and that Trump and his administration must be stopped.
Thank you, Lisa. And Carlos, I would just add that, with this court decision, and the fact that the injunction will remain in place, we're actually going to see the number of people with DACA increase, right, because their renewals will be hopefully approved rather than people losing status. And so I think just that assumption, this is one of the reasons why this is such an important and great decision, because it will provide that stability to people. And look, at the end of the day, this Congress has shown time and time again that it is dysfunctional, not just on immigration policy, but on many issues. We have, the horrific events that just happened in Parkland, Florida, and we're hoping that they will take up, gun control issues as well. And it really is a question about whether this Congress is able to put party aside and put the country above all. And this is true for immigrants as well for all of the many needs that Americans have in this country. And so we will keep fighting on a united front because we do believe that Congress should do the right thing. Both the law and history and justice is on our side, and we'll keep fighting. In the meantime, we have these two important injunctions in place. The decision today from the Supreme Court to say, no, Trump administration, you need to follow the rules. Go ahead and go through the normal process. But in the meantime, there's a real life benefit for the individual DACA recipients who are now able to apply for their renewal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all very much.
Thanks for your question. Sure. Next question, operator.
Certainly. We'll go next to Victor Ramos with Newsday. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking the question. I have two questions. One, if there had been this buildup coming up to the March 5th date, because many permits were set to expire, you called it an artificial deadline. So I want to ask you a little bit more to tell me, is that still a meaningful date in the context of what's happened? Is it something that's still looming for many people and would, you know, represent an important time for the community, or, you know, are we basically back to status quo where, you know, Dreamers will be on DACA and it's just a continuation of not knowing what's going to happen? And then the second part of the question is, given the failure of the bills in the Senate, what do you see as the path forward in terms of legislation?
Great questions. Gdesa, do you want to start, especially on the March 5th deadline?
You know, over 1,000 people will mobilize to D.C. on March 5th to tell Congress to protect immigrant young people and defeat the Trump plan. Because the reality is that just because you are able to apply for DACA now, given these court rulings, it does not mean that you have the protection of DACA. It also does not mean that DHS agents have relented in their pursuit of ensuring that young people like myself and the members of United We Dream are hunted down by ICE agents and CBP agents, and it does nothing for the thousands, hundreds of thousands of young immigrants that were never protected from DACA. One of the cases that we have here at United We Dream is the case of Edith, someone from Texas who was a DACA recipient, was detained at school for being in a fight, and then because of that he was detained in ICE, and because he could not take the time and be in a detention center, it was just so awful that he decided to self-deport himself or sign his deportation papers. This is the America that we're living in, and Republicans continue to hold us hostage for their mass deportation plan, and we say enough. So March 5th is a consequential deadline because people still don't have DACA protections, because Republicans continue to refuse to provide permanent protections for me and millions of others, and because Donald Trump continues with his pursuit of a mass deportation agenda.
Thank you so much, Gdesa. Does anyone else want to add to that response? Okay, we will go on to the next question because I'm hearing that we have about 9 more questions.
What about the legislative?
Go ahead, sorry. The legislative,
I had also
what is
asked,
the path forward?
Yeah,
so listen, I think as I mentioned earlier, right, we have been collectively working very closely on trying to get Congress to act. At the end of the day, it really is going to depend on whether President Trump actually wants a solution or not, because he has rejected the bipartisan agreements that have been brought to him, even the bipartisan agreements like the Graham-Durbin agreement, which was based on his framework and his request. And so we will continue to fight for a legislative solution because, as Gdesa said, that is the only place where we can find permanent relief for our community. However, it is really questionable whether President Trump actually wants a solution on the DREAM Act and for DREAMers, or whether he is using DREAMers as a political pawn to achieve a larger immigration reform package based on their blueprint of radically changing our legal immigration system and redefining what it means to be an American and who is worthy of being an American. That is really what is at the core of this administration, especially as the Stephen Millers and Steve Bannons of the world have been shaping what this administration wants on immigration. So if President Trump wants a solution, there is a solution to be had. Congress, we will continue working with Congress to ensure we can reach a bipartisan agreement that provides that permanent relief. But at the end of the day, President Trump will have to sign that bill and signal that he is willing to sign a bill that provides relief to Dreamers. This is the crisis he created. He can provide the solution.
Yeah, this is Grace. I would add that it's in the hands of Paul Ryan and House Republican leadership right now, and those Republicans that are up for re-election in this year. And our message to them is don't start your work by trying to pass the Trump's dead on arrival plan. We have seen it fail the Senate with only getting 39 votes. Trump has killed 3 bipartisan agreements so far, and House leaders need to solve this crisis now that Trump created without hurting our families. And that is what 86% of the American public is calling for. That is what attorneys generals all across the country are calling for. That's what United We Dream, NILC, and others are calling for. And there's a question about whether this Congress will stand up to this president that is having a mass deportation agenda for young people of color and our families. And that is the question about whether this Congress is actually functioning to its constitutional responsibilities or whether it's just enabling Donald Trump.
Great. Thank you. And operator, let's go to the next question, please.
And our next question comes from Elliot Spagat with the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi. My question was already asked. I tried to withdraw, but it just the meaning of the March 5th deadline, whether it means anything. So I think that was asked and
Great.
Answered. But Mr. Pincus, are you involved in the case? I'm sorry I didn't catch that.
Yes, I am, but I'm not speaking here for the clients that I represent in the case, which are the companies that the Attorney General referred to. I'm just speaking here as a Supreme Court observer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Great. Next question, operator.
We'll go next to Julia Preston with the Marshall Project. Your line is open.
Yeah, I have two questions. One, is there anything in any of this litigation that allows for new applications for DACA at this point? And second, what is the message that you are sending? Because I know there's been kind of a debate about whether, given the uncertainties, it is wise for DACA people to re-up their information, provide their fingerprints. Are you advising people to apply for renewal or not?
Great questions, Julia. Thank you. So on the first question in terms of new applicants, that is part of our lawsuit in the Batalla case. Unfortunately, the injunction does not cover that. Both injunctions, the California and New York injunctions, only allow for people that already have DACA to come forward to renew their DACA. So we are definitely looking at legal options as part of our litigation in terms of being able to expand that. But at this moment, the only people who are covered by these injunctions are DACA recipients who can come forward to renew their DACA. And then on the second question of what the advice is, I'm going to go to Eliana first, because I know Make the Road is actually processing a lot of these renewal applications right now. And depending on time, we'll go to Besa as well. Eliana?
Yes. So we are encouraging people to renew their DACA application. Even if it's still a few months away, I myself have filed my DACA renewal application, and it has been accepted. I already went for my biometrics, and I'm waiting, hopefully, to get my approval. So we are encouraging everyone to renew the DACA as soon as possible, and we are offering services in, you know, Make the Road on New York and Long Island to help people renew their DACA applications. So we are definitely encouraging people to renew the DACA. And, of course, you know, we know, of course, it's not a permanent solution, but it will help us by some time. So I think everyone should be applying to renew their DACA.
And, Julia, one of the things is, again, this population, these are the individuals that already have DACA. And so the federal government already has their information. There isn't that increased risk. But at the end of the day, it's an individualized decision. We at the National Immigration Law Center are working with legal service and direct service providers across the country, like Make the Road, for example, and others. But really, at the end of the day, each individual needs to be provided the information so that they can make an assessment on whether they are willing to come forward. As Greta said, right, this is an administration that is not to be trusted by the immigrant community. And the data from USCIS, as one of the questions that was asked earlier about how they are processing DACA renewals, et cetera, will be really critical. And so far, as you heard from the answers earlier, we don't have that information. USCIS is not providing that. And so it'll be important for reporters like you to be asking USCIS about how quickly they're processing, what are they doing, is there anything that has changed or anything that's different. Thank you for your question, Julia. Operator, next question.
Certainly. We'll go next to Monica Campbell with PRI's The World. Your line is open.
Hi. What can we say about DACA recipients who have fallen out of status since September 5th and who've been unable to renew in time? What can we say about those people, and what's the message in terms of being out of status but perhaps eligible still?
Great. Who wants to take that call again? I don't know, Greta?
Yeah.
Eliana?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I think that for those folks, we're encouraging them to take this opportunity to apply to renew their DACA. We are helping people to have self-determination and if they want to move forward with this process, because we know that this is something that they have to decide for themselves, we have to decide for ourselves, then we're supporting them in that decision. We're connecting them to a good and secure legal counsel. United We Dream has provided over $750,000 for immigrant young people to help pay for renewal fees. But again, people need to make their own decisions. And we know that USCIS hired the former director of an anti-immigrant hate group as the person who supported to help us. So I think that for United We Dream, we are continuing in our commitment to fight for a permanent protection and calling Republicans to act now. We are supporting our members and having self-determination, and the ones that want to apply to reply, and are encouraging people to do that, supporting people with the money to be able to do that, knowing all the while that our job is to ensure that DHS and USCIS remain checked, and that we continue to ensure that we do not continue to fund them at the level so that they can enact their mass deportation agenda.
Thank you. Today's operator, next question.
Yes, we will take a follow-up from Michael Rosenberg with Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi there. I just had a quick follow-up. I just wanted to know, actually, if Greta could share where she's from or what state in the country, at least.
Yes, I'm from the great state of Texas, okay. And I live now in Washington, D.C.
Thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Micah. Next question, operator.
Yes, we'll go next to Maria Sacchetti with The Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for having this. Indy or Maria Elena or whoever can speak to the legal process. Can you provide a bit more specificity about the next steps? And there's talk about Dreamers having months to renew their permits, but how much time could they really have realistically through this process?
Andy, do you want to go first?
Sure. Well, so right now the injunctions are in effect, and although, as I said, the government obviously could try to have them put on ice. That seems unlikely to succeed. And so the injunctions seem likely to stay in effect till the resolution of both of those appeals, which at the earliest, given the briefing and argument and need for decision, would seem to be in the June-July timeframe. So worst-case scenario, again, barring some extraordinary steps by the government, it seems as if the injunctions would be in effect at least that long. And as I mentioned, there are these other cases pending in D.C. and Maryland. And in fact, while we've been on this call, I just got a notice that the D.C. District Court has scheduled a hearing on the motions pending in that case for March 14th. So there could be a third injunction entered in that case.
Great. Thank you, Maria. Attorney General Becerra, if you're still on, do you want to respond to that at all?
Hi, this is Sarah Lovenheim on behalf of California Attorney General Javier Becerra. He had to step away, but he's happy to connect and speak further with anybody who would like to be in touch. And I can be emailed at sarah.lovenheim@doj.ca.gov if anyone has further questions for him.
Thank you, Sarah. And we'll provide that information to all of the reporters as well to make sure that they can connect with you directly and connect with the Attorney General. Next question, operator.
We'll go next to Maria Pena with La Opinion. Your line is open.
Yeah, I guess my question was answered, but just to be clear, if you can sum up what this decision means and does not mean for Dreamers, even as they keep up the pressure for Congress to act on this.
Thank you for your question, Maria. So, yeah, really, really basic. What this decision means is that the Trump administration has to go back to the lower courts and go through the regular process of appealing both the California decisions and the New York decisions. What it means for DACA recipients is that those individuals who have DACA or who lost DACA after the September 5th deadline can come forward to renew their DACA. It does not mean that a new applicant for DACA, somebody who is applying for the first time because they just turned 16, for example, after the September 5th deadline, or they, you know, haven't been able to save up the money to apply and they're now just coming forward, they, at this moment, will not be able to come forward to apply for the first time. Only DACA renewals are being allowed. And what it means is that there's a short temporary window that DACA recipients will be able to come forward and renew their status and have that stability, emotional, economic, social stability, but we still need a permanent solution from Congress. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you.
Operator, next question.
We'll take our next question from Esther Lee with Think Progress. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for taking this call. This was touched on earlier, but as we remember, the White House began the phase-out process for DACA because of Judge Andrew Hannon. So can you talk to us about some of the looming threats that could still happen moving forward if Attorney General Ken Paxton tells Hannon to issue an injunction to stop DACA?
Great question, Esther. Andy, would you like to talk about Judge Hannon?
Well, the issue is there are now two injunctions requiring the government to continue to abide by DACA, as you've heard, and so a conflicting injunction issued by Judge Hannon might require the courts of appeals to resolve things sooner, but it can't overturn those existing injunctions issued by other courts.
Thank you. Next question, operator.
Yes, we'll move now to David Cortinas with La Voz Hispanic. Your line is open.
David? You might be on mute. Operator, let's go to the next question. I think we can follow up with David.
Okay, certainly. We'll go next to Christopher Cavalli with Greenville. Your line is open.
My question was already answered. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions, operator? I know we're hitting the mark now.
And we do have another question. We'll go to Celia Rainey with Talk Media News. Your line is open.
Hi. Do you think there's a chance we will see any legislation passed before the March 5th deadline that would ensure a more permanent solution for DACA?
One would hope so, because that is what we need Congress to do, is to pass a permanent solution. As Gresa mentioned, this all now rests in the hands of Congress, Republicans, particularly Speaker Ryan, and ultimately President Trump. Unlikely, unfortunately, for this to happen before March 5th, but listen, if it can happen, we are all for it. Operator, any other questions?
We do. We have one final question as a follow-up from Julia Preston with the Marshall Project. Your line is open.
Yes, I just wanted to ask.
That's the last for Julia.
Yes, all right. Yes, are you concerned that this decision by SCOTUS is going to absolutely take all of the momentum out of the legislative effort in Congress since there's no clear deadline anymore? And how are you going to respond to that?
Asa, would you like to take that? And I'm happy to respond as well.
Julia, we're expecting 1,000 people here in Washington, D.C. on March 5th. We are seeing community gatherings all across the country because the urgency is not around a policy, is not only around a policy solution, it's around care and around supporting undocumented young people who are still under the threat of deportation from Donald Trump. So with or without a legislative solution, I think that you will see, you will continue to see pressure from the American public to solve this issue. People are smart enough to look through whatever communications messaging the Republicans would want to say that this is no longer an issue, because we see stories like Eder's, because we see stories like Rosa Maria, and frankly, because you will continue to see deportation of young people. And so the urgency does not end until we have a permanent protection for our community and for undocumented young people. And you'll see that again in March 5th, and you'll continue to see that throughout the year.
Yep, and Julie, I'll just add that, look, at the end of the day, this is a temporary fix, and everyone in Congress knows that, and President Trump knows that, right? If he wants a solution to the crisis he created, he can signal that he will sign a bipartisan agreement that comes to his desk. That is still a big question mark, but he knows that. Congress knows that. They're all smart, smart men and women. Many of them are lawyers themselves, and so they can read that this is a temporary fix. In the meantime, though, it's an important victory for immigrant communities. It's an important victory for the DACA recipients that will receive this additional extension for their DACA. But the fight continues in Congress. That is where the ultimate solution lies. And with that, we will close out. Thank you, everyone, for joining today. Thank you for our incredible speakers, Attorney General Becerra, to our incredibly courageous plaintiff and leader, Eliana Fernandez, to Andy Pincus, and to Besa Martinez. Thank you again for everyone. We will provide information. If you have any questions, you can email us at media@milk.org to be connected with any of the speakers, and we'll be sending out a press statement out as well soon. Thanks again, everybody. Have a great day.